Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Freak Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and shortly thereafter, Batman was created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. But it wasn't until many years and decades later that we got a true Year One, Ground Zero, origin, detailed origin story or expanded origin story for Batman coming to at us from Frank Miller. To discuss that today, I've got my partner in comic book crime, the ever-loving, rambling man himself, Rimzo Martinez. Rimzo, how you feeling, buddy?
I am almost out of the woods of this cold. You know, it's hard being the Second Print Nation Kenny, in which I have gone through so many bumps and bruises and sicknesses and stuff. Half the time people are just taking wagers over whether or not I will survive for the next episode, but haven't missed one yet, bitches. Haven't missed one yet.
No, you have not. The streak continues. You actually have a better streak than I, because I did miss one week that you valiantly filled in solo. So this guy's been through COVID. This guy's been through mystery illnesses. This guy's been through me bitching about audio echo and, you know, dressing up as a Taliban. I mean, this guy's done it all. We do it all for you people. But luckily, I am producing today's episode, so you can hopefully talk a little bit less than last week. And, you know,
but now I have the perfect Christian Bale voice. Rachel,
yes. Yeah, exactly. You're actually in the right spot for it. We should have swapped weeks once we found out the voice. So, you know, feel free to interject with a little Christian Bale Batman whenever you think it's appropriate. But
I had poor man's Batman last week, so it's only appropriate now we go to real Batman.
Yes, now we're going to real Batman. And again, this is Batman Year One. Basically, the backstory of this in 1986 or so. Denny O'Neill wrote a introduction for this version of Batman Year One. Basically, DC editorial got together and they were like, "All right, things are getting we're updating our heroes. You know, our stories are getting more modern. We're going to do this and that, but we don't have any update to give to Batman. Like, we don't need to make him really darker necessarily. So, what can we do here?" And they decided to bring on Frank Miller for a very short run on the main Batman title to bring us Batman Year One, basically just a detailed chronicle of the first year that Bruce Wayne becomes the Batman. And this one is written by Frank Miller, but the art is not by Frank Miller. Frank Miller is, of course, as we discussed, I think the we did 300 and we did Ronin were the two big Frank Miller books. And was he the artist on Ronin? He was not on 300.
Yeah, because that was one of the first ones that he really got to do on his own with his own unique style. He had done Wolverine before that, but this is really the first time that Frank Miller was known for the Frank Miller style.
But for this one, Frank Miller opted to bring on another artist by the name of David Mazzucchelli. So we will discuss his art and the writing of Frank Miller in this episode. So before we dive in, Rimzo, what is your past experience? When did you first read this story? And I know you definitely read it before this one.
Oh, I've read it. I've read it so many times. It's probably one of my favorite Batman stories of all time. I remember reading it right after watching Batman Begins in theaters in 2005. And after that, I was just so hooked. When I heard that Christopher Nolan looked at Year One as the primary source material for Batman Begins, immediately I had to go grab it. And I'm even a fan of the animated Batman Year One film, which has Bryan Cranston as Commissioner Gordon, and the guy who was the actor who played Commissioner Gordon in Gotham voicing Bruce Wayne. It had an amazing cast. It's one of the better adaptions out there.
That's great casting, because like this version of Commissioner Gordon specifically, I mean, he always looks kind of the same, but this version in this book really, really does look like vintage Bryan Cranston.
It's uncanny. I mean, it's one of those moments where like the casting is just, you know, a nail on the head. So, you know, I love it. It surprises me that, you know, this is one of those stories where it slips in and out of canon sometimes. A few years ago, they had Batman Year Zero, which mm-hmm. tried to do this, but while it's definitely considered canon now, Year Zero, that is, a lot of the real hardcore fans really look back to Year One as being that fundamental basis for your definitive Batman. So I don't think you could be a Batman fan without having some respect for Year One.
Yeah, Year One has gone in and out of canon. It was originally definitely in canon, and then we had Crisis not long after that, which shook things up. And of course, canon has changed, you know, with a myriad of different Crisis events over and over the years. And now everything matters. Everything happened. So I guess it did happen in at least one branch of the DC multiverse.
In my own personal head canon that matters to me, there is no Batman without Year One.
For sure. That would be, I think we might have actually said this before, head canon would be a great name for a podcast.
I'm trying to make it a word. I'm trying to make it a thing.
It could be a segment on this program. What's your headcanon on Batman? This is, as far as headcanon goes, this is absolutely as canon as it can be, because this is such a great origin story, and it definitely can work with any current iteration of Batman. You know, you could always take this as a starting point for sure.
Yeah.
And as a starting point, we shall take it, because we start off in issue, well, this is issue one of Year One, but it's actually Batman number 404. And we start off on January 4th, the beginning of the year, appropriately enough. And we are in Gotham City, and we're basically seeing at the same time Commissioner Gordon, who's like moving into Gotham to take a job with the Gotham PD. And at the same time, Bruce Wayne is flying into Gotham after a 12-year hiatus. And we learn this from a series of, first of all, they have like these co-narrations. And this is kind of an element that Frank Miller uses throughout the story, where, Gordon is narrating whatever's going on with him. Bruce Wayne is also narrating, and then sometimes these narrations just sort of cross over and collide with each other as they actually end up interacting in the real world. I just want to address that right off the bat, since I'm talking about it already. What do you think of Frank Miller's use of the kind of the co-narrations here to sort of move along the story and interweave the tales of Bruce Wayne and Jim Gordon? Because I think one thing that Year One really solidifies and really helps make a lot of sense down the road for future Batman stuff is that relationship and the trust that develops between Bruce Wayne and Jim Gordon.
Last week was probably a good contrast to this, because of with those Moon Knight issues that we covered, we got a very 70s vintage, third person narrator. So the narrator is there. He knows the story. He has a very clear and present voice, but the narrator is not one of the characters. He's not one of the inner monologues. The narrator's just there.
He's Stanley, true believer.
Yeah, this is really a rejection of that. And it's around this area of the 80s where you see a lot of that narration slowly going away. It would creep back in the 90s, but this is really an era where a lot of writers and artists are like, more art, less words. So to focus it on the inner monologues of Bruce Wayne and Commissioner Gordon, they're really trying to set up that personal relationship that really matters. I've always been a fan of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. If I remember correctly, Frankenstein was that way, because you got the inner monologues of Dr. Victor Frankenstein, but you also had the inner monologues of the Frankenstein monster. And what it did was it allowed you to look into each man separately so you could understand the other better. And I think going of that tactic, it's something that influenced my writing a lot with my second book, which was fiction. I tried to really pull that in each way. But, I mean, Frank Miller really knew what he was going for this one. And I think what it does is it not only makes it just stand out as a story, but this is why people go back to this and they're like, this is canon. This has to matter, because mm-hmm. we've never had a better fleshing out of the psyches of these characters ever after that.
Yeah, this is too good not to matter. Not to spoil our reviews at the end of this, but I think it's probably already pretty obvious that we're going to end up writing this fairly highly. So we see, we also get another narrative feature that was used quite a bit around this time, both by Frank Miller and Alan Moore. And this is what I always just call the news. And that's where you see like a series of newscasts that are sort of updating you on things. And this is effective too, because, a lot of this stuff you would never get from Bruce Wayne's own head narrative in a way that made sense. They're recapping that Bruce Wayne has been gone for 12 years, is just returning to Gotham, blah, blah, blah. He's just this 25-year-old rich kid just coming back from doing God knows what for the last 12 years or so. Of course, we know what he's been doing. We know what he's been up to. Let's see. So basically, and we also get some little snippets, some little nuggets that kind of, help build the story along the way. Like we hear that, we see elements of like Harvey Dent existing as the, what is he, the prosecutor?
He's the district attorney.
District attorney. That's the word I'm looking for. I'm not a legal man, Remso. I'm just a comic book guy. Just a simple man. And that we see that Harvey Dent has recently dropped charges against this Commissioner Loeb. So we already know that there has been at least some kind of like rumors of corruption or known corruption in Gotham. And we get that A, from a lot of these little snippets along the way, but also from, diving right into the story where we see that Bruce Warden, man, I'm really having trouble pronouncing these guys' names.
Oh,
today.
My.
Bruce Jim Gordon. I really want them to be one person, which maybe just speaks to the brilliance of this story, because it really is their narratives interweave so much. So that's what I'm going to chalk it up to, not my complete schizophrenia. Jim Gordon is partnered with this guy, Flass, and Flass is, he's an asshole. He's a piece of shit cop. He goes around beating people up. He's a corrupt cop. And right from the get-go, Gordon just like has it in for this guy. And I really like this one line Flass is kind of harassing these like street thugs or whatever and beating up this one kid. And Gordon's narrative, he says, Flass has had Green Beret training, I can tell, and he knows how to use his size. I watch and I don't do a damn thing, and I memorize every move. Next panel with a up close on Gordon's eye for future reference, which I just really love that from the beginning, like they show you that Gordon is a no nonsense motherfucker. Like he is not into this corruption shit, and he can detect bad seeds. And not only that, but he's not the kind of person who is going to, like, he is in this very moment kind of letting something bad go on. But you can see from the beginning, like, he has his eye on the corrupt people that are in power here, and he is going to take them down. And they tell you all of that with just that one panel, which I just found really brilliant. Let's see. And we also get some snippets, like he's praying for some negative tests for Barbara. This is his wife, Barbara, not his daughter, Barbara, at the time. And we're just kind of going through this. We're into this whole story of year one is interweaving between Jim Gordon and Bruce Wayne. So we also kind of see as we're proceeding through the months here, we go to February 21st, February 26th. Bruce Wayne is like just practicing karate basically at the mansion. He's breaking bricks with his hand, breaking trees with his legs. And this stuff does tie in later. Like there's a specific panel where you see Bruce Wayne literally just kicking a tree in half. And this ends up, this plays a part in the story going forward. So Frank Miller, and this is something Frank Miller is always great at, is dropping little snippets, dropping even if it's just like a little panel here or a panel there or a line here or there. Everything matters in Frank Miller stories.
Have you seen the animated film of this?
I have not.
Man, let me tell you, when I call it one of the better comic book adaptations, in that scene of the tree, it's almost better than the book.
Is this an HBO Max? Yes. Can I get that? I think everything's there now, right? Okay. All right. Well, that is my long, long, long list of things that I say I'll watch that Renzo recommends
so
that
I
rarely get to. Let's see. Moving along here. Yeah, I have my last note. Bruce kicks down trees. So basically, as the months go on here, there's one night where Gordon goes out and he gets beat up by a bunch of Flass's flunkies. He gets, and this is kind of interweaving with images of Bruce Wayne, who is getting dressed up for his first night out. And what Bruce is now doing, he's not putting on a costume yet, really. I mean, he is putting on a costume, but really he's just dressing up not as a billionaire. Like he's driving his like limo or whatever his fancy car is. I'm not sure. It's a black something or other. And he parks it somewhere and he's just dressed in like normal dude clothes. And then he just puts some makeup on and gives himself a big scar on his face. So this is the first iteration of like the Batman costume, sort of. It's his first attempt to go out and fight crime, and all he does is like put on a little makeup. So then he goes into while Jim Gordon's getting beat up, Bruce wanders into the Gotham City, I guess, red light district, as you might want to call it. So we have all the red light things happening. There's petty crime all around, and there is prostitution and this one little prostitute who's like literally like 14 years old, is talking to Bruce Wayne. She's like, cheer you up. And he's like, I doubt it. How old are you? She's like, as young as you want me to be. This is kind of really fucked up, actually.
Frank Miller.
Considering how young this girl is. Yeah. But, he's setting this up for a reason. Like, this is why Bruce is doing this stuff, because there's some bad shit going on in Gotham. Someone's got to do something about it.
Chicago's a terrible. I mean, Gotham.
Yeah, whatever it is now. I don't know if you noticed this, Remso. I never made this connection before in my entire life. The name of this 14-year-old prostitute, does it ring a bell? Her name is Holly.
Holly.
Are you making any connection from a recent writer of Batman?
Oh, man.
I'll fill in the gap for you. You remember Tom King's Batman run? There was this whole storyline that went like 50 issues or something.
Oh, yeah. That's Falcone. Was it? I'm sorry. I'm getting all the Gotham gangsters. Was it Falcone? Maroney?
This is Holly Robinson, who was the one who Catwoman was in jail for, or she was in Arkham Asylum for, because she was like taking the rap for this Holly Robinson who like burned down something and killed a bunch of people.
Same one?
This is the same person. I make the connection. Now I realize Tom King was being, I mean, it's kind of an intelligent connection. I just never made the connection. And now, and when I think back on that storyline, oh yeah, like
Selena should like let her die in the streets.
Yes, but Selena was always talking about how she took this Holly under her wings and was protective of her, and that's why she was taking the rap for her on that thing in Tom King's story. So yeah, that is absolutely, I'm positive it's supposed to be this same Holly that's in the story who's also under Selena's
wings. Yeah, I always assume that all these like Gotham orphans are always like 6 degrees of Carmine Falcone's kids or something.
Yeah, I think these are all ultimately connected to like, because Flass is connected to these guys, and they're ultimately all connected to like there's the Carmine Falcone crime family, there's the Roman guy crime family. But yeah, they're all interweaving here. It's all part of, because Bruce's thing is like he wants to take down all of it. He wants to take down literally all the crime. So he's starting at the petty level, but this is just his way to get his foot in the door and like work his way up the ladder, so to speak, as we'll see.
You gotta beat up some child prostitutes before you could take down mafia dons.
Yeah, exactly. So basically Bruce ends up dressed up. Scarface Bruce gets into it with this guy who's like sort of abusing this Holly chick, and gets into a fight with him. And then Holly stabs Bruce in the freaking thigh. Ungrateful bitch. So Holly stabs Bruce, and then Selena, who you see. So we meet Selena Kyle. She's this like prostitute that has, and she has really short hair at this time, like a shaved head. She's up in the window. She's calling down. She sees what's going on. So she comes down to defend Holly, who is like, you know, she's kind of taken under her tutelage, I guess you could say. So she comes down and she like tries to kick Bruce, and he blocks her kick and punches her right in the face. I haven't read this in many years. Like I kind of forgot about a lot of this.
You gotta
stuff.
Give some, you gotta take
yeah,
some.
So yeah, so this is Bruce, and so this is not quite canon then. See, yeah, I mean, this is canon, but like,
you also notice this is the first time that they changed Selena's race in the comics.
What, I can't even tell what is her race.
She's black in this one.
She's supposed to be black. Is she supposed to be black in the current comic? No,
not right? Currently, but they change it because of,
really? I just thought she had short hair.
She does have short hair, but she's also,
she does look
it. Okay. She's black in this comic.
All right. So this is Halle Berry. This is Halle Berry.
Yeah. Or Eartha Kitt, if you want to go Adam West Batman. Or as one of our fans said, this is me for the first time going, actually.
Actually. Yeah. We got a great review. Do you have those reviews in front of you, by the way?
Yeah.
We got a great review where one of our fantastic new fans said that we are not, he's grateful that we are not one of those comic book podcasts that comes across with that actually vibe, which is very nice.
And this is from Ed Lockman on Apple. Really funny podcast. You can hear their love of comics come through without completely nerding out and actually-ing. So I'm sorry, man, because it was in the back of my head. I had to go ahead and do it. And by the way, when are you ever going to hear somebody ever mention Eartha Kitt from Adam West Batman on a show? I might as well read the other one while we're here. This is from Soupy 21. Yeah. Check this out. 5 stars. Easily my favorite comics podcast. Cannot recommend highly enough. It's because I've got random Eartha Kitt knowledge.
Yes, that is that's our man, Justin Campbell. I happen to know.
Attaboy.
Continuing on here, yeah, but like this is Bruce's first attempt to like break into the criminal underworld is not going well. He gets stabbed in the leg by a teenager. He's got to fight this freaking other prostitute here, and then the cops show up and they shoot Bruce Wayne in the neck, and he's like, oh shit, no, I can't let them take me in. Like, and he's like, you literally see him like blacking out and passing out, and he does get pass out and he wakes up and he's in the back of a police car. So this is all his first attempt to like fight crime, and it has gone horribly, horribly wrong. However, though, Bruce is like kind of like talking to these cops, and he's like, he just says, I warned you. And they're like, oh my God. He breaks the handcuffs and basically just like gets into it with these cops, ends up crashing the cop car. He like, I don't know if he, I know he didn't break the cop's neck cause he's not killing people, but he like grabs this one cop by the head and ends up crashing the car. And like the police car goes up in smoke, and it's a whole thing. And Bruce finally bloody Bruce, who's been shot in the neck, stabbed in the leg, makes it back to his car, turns on the car. Meanwhile, Commissioner Gordon forward and we go back to this interweaving narrative here. Commissioner Gordon is basically taking the call, and he's just like, man. And he asks, and he's on a call asking actually where — this is unrelated, but they're kind of happening at the same time. He's calling and saying, oh, Detective Flass. Oh, he's off duty, Lieutenant, probably at the poker party over at Schutz and with the guys. And Gordon just goes, with the guys. And you see Gordon speed off. And as Gordon is driving, you know, apparently to maybe go confront Flass here, he ends up basically bumping into Bruce Wayne, like basically just driving right each other as Bruce Wayne is speeding home. And we also see a commentary from someone else, because like Bruce Wayne is a famous person, and they're saying, oh, that's Bruce Wayne's car. What's he on? And this guy just comments, cocaine. Rich people take cocaine. Saw a special on it. That line just cracked me up. Yeah. So Bruce races home, and then Gordon finds Flass. And he follows him out of this like poker night, pulls his car over, basically force crashes his car, holds a gun at him, and then puts his gun down, tosses a bat to Flass, and fights him with his fist.
That's some gangster right there.
Gordon is a freaking badass here. He even says like, he says, I show him my gun. He says my name and drops his. He's big Green Beret training. It's been 15 years since I had to take out a Green Beret. Even so, he deserves a handicap. And that's why he tosses him the bat. And a Flash just comes at him. He's like, I don't crack his skull. I don't crush his larynx. I don't break his ribs or punch my hand through his chest. I do just enough to keep him out of the hospital. So Gordon beats the living fucking shit out of this guy. I love this scene so much because they just show you right away. Like, Gordon's basically as badass as Batman. Like, maybe he doesn't have all the ninja training and the money and the gadgets, but he is beating the shit out of this guy who has a bat, who he's given a bat to. He strips him naked and handcuffs him and fucking leaves him there. He basically just says he'll never report it, not Flass. He'll make up some story that involves at least 10 attackers and never admit that I did it. So Gordon is not only a badass, but he understands the psychology of people like this so much to know this guy is this corrupt cop who probably works for like mob guys and shit. And he's not going to go saying that this one cop beat him up and left him in the woods. He's got him. He's going to make up some shit. So he sends a message, but also knows that it's not going to get out what happened. So it's just fucking awesome. And it shows Bruce Wayne, not Bruce Wayne. There we go again. That Jim Gordon in many ways, it kind of shows the symbiotic relationship between Jim Gordon and Bruce Wayne, because they are both in their own way willing to go outside the rules of the system in order to, pursue their vision of justice, so to speak. Yeah, and he basically gets home, and this is where we finally get the flashback. I like that Frank Miller doesn't do a drawn out version of this. We only just get it in a couple panels, but we get the flashback of seeing Bruce Wayne's parents killed by Joe Chill, I guess, depending on which continuity you're in. But they don't mention that here. I don't think this is before that even mattered, or maybe Joe Chill was canon at this point. It's hard to keep track of all that.
Nah, Tim Burton hasn't had time to fuck it up yet.
Yeah, exactly. We go through that, in this moment, the bat flies through the window where Bruce Wayne is, and he just kind of like is doing his own narration here. Without warning, it comes crashing through the window of your study and mine. I've seen it before somewhere. It frightened me as a boy. Frightened me. Yes, father, I shall become a bat. And this is where he grabs the bell. And you just see one panel of him holding the bell. And he mentions this earlier in his narration, but that's Alfred's bell. He's like, I could ring this bell. He's like, I'm going to die right now, basically. Like, Bruce Wayne is almost dead. He's bleeding from his thigh, bleeding from his neck, been in a car accident. Like, things are not good. He's going to die if he just stays there. So the only hope that he has is to ring Alfred. And of course, if he rings Alfred, Alfred's going to know what happened. So, and I like that, like, Frank Miller is really good at telling us what happened, showing us what happened without having to give us six issues to show us what happened. So, you know, like for example, we only had the one panel showing Bruce Wayne's parents get shot. Well, that's cool. We already know that happened. And we obviously already know that Alfred ends up knowing who Batman is and, you know, becoming part of the whole thing. So we don't need to see that whole process. We just get the one panel, which shows him ringing the bell. And then we know what happens there. We know that is when Alfred comes up, sees Bruce near death, saves him, and of course, becomes his partner in the whole thing. So what do you just think, first of all, of just this first issue, this first foray of Frank Miller into the first year of Batman?
I mean, if you're not hooked, I don't know what's wrong with you. But what I really appreciate is the art here is very subdued, especially for a book that contains so much action. Usually I criticize overuse of text, monologues, what have you. But I mean, the balance here is perfect. And strangely enough, it's probably, while it's not Frank Miller's best work when you compare it to the other things he's done, it's personally one of my favorites because it's one of the few times where it really feels like a comic book without, you know, a lot of his other eccentricities and stuff like you see if like the Dark Knight Returns and stuff like that. Like this is it
without the bells and whistles.
This is a standard comic book taken seriously. And because of that, it's beautiful.
Indeed. Beautiful indeed. All right. So we move in now to Batman number 405. And we start off. Commissioner Gordon is on the way to a crime scene where this guy, Albert Bloom, is holding some people. I think he's holding it's his family. He's holding hostage. Basically, he's this guy that escaped from Arkham. I think this is the first reference. Well, not first ever, but in canon, I guess, reference to Arkham Asylum. And at the end of the day, Gordon just goes in there again. This is like his thing. Goes up, drops his gun to like show that he's now coming in there unarmed. And meanwhile, Barbara is watching on TV. Barbara, who you can clearly see is pregnant, who we know is pregnant with the future Batgirl, Barbara Gordon. And he goes up the stairs, walks right in. The guy's pointing his gun at him.
Ooh, I don't know if I should correct you.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, actually,
actually me. I just made that assumption.
So it's Barbara's older brother, James Jr.
Oh, I didn't even know that was a person that existed.
Oh, he's a serial killer, actually. Okay. If we want to get into it, but
actually.
That's just
kind of, yeah, now we're gonna do it all the time. Now that we got one guy that now we are gonna be those guys. Look what's happened here. But actually, Jim Gordon then goes up and just walks right up the stairs, and the guy's kind of nuts, you know. He's just saying no lunch, and Jim just goes, I'll order out. And the guy's like, said no lunch, no gangrene lunch. And Gordon just goes, I know. And the guy's pointing a gun right at his head. This guy has balls of steel. Like they really build up the character of Jim Gordon here. This is as much Batman Year One as it is Jim Gordon Year One. I gotta say, maybe even more so. You could argue this is more a Jim Gordon story than a Batman story. But Jim just walks right up, doesn't stop moving, disarms him, like punches him in the face, and you know, and saves the day. So Jim Gordon is like, he's the best freaking like detective, best freaking cop that exists on this squad, and he's making waves with the good people and the bad people. So the press loves him, you know, he's like a press darling. But you know, the people above him, especially this Flash character, obviously for his own reasons as well, they're not exactly very happy with him. So yeah, they just continue to, we just see like as April goes by, Gordon is kind of getting the attention of the commissioner, and this is where we kind of learn, it's kind of implied throughout, that the commissioner is sort of corrupt and is working with Flass and has his own guys kind of in the department that are sort of on his side. But he's got his eye on Gordon. Let's put it that way. And meanwhile, let's see, Flass actually recounts his own. There's a funny scene here where Flass recounts his own encounter with Batman, but he makes it out like, oh, yeah, I was busting up this cocaine deal. But when we actually see what's happening, and obviously we know he's corrupt, he's like as part of the cocaine deal. But he is describing his encounter with the Batman, because now through the various news reports and such, we hear like reports of this Batman character who's, of course, Bruce Wayne donning this Batmantle and going out and continuing to do his thing. As the months go on, there's just, you know, reports of the Batman while Jim Gordon continues to move up the ladder. Batman one night out, these petty thieves are like stealing TVs, or I think those are record players actually, and on this balcony, and he goes, jumps down, like kicks their asses. The one guy gets knocked over the balcony, and Batman grabs him, holds his ankle. Meanwhile, this other guy is about to like kicks him in the face, and another guy is like about to like slam him in the back of the head with the TV. So now Bruce is kind of getting his ass kicked by these guys while still holding onto the original guy that fell over. So like again, you learn so much about the characters through so little. Through just a very simple scene here, you see that Bruce is a badass, like, but also that this is not perfect. Like, he's making mistakes in the beginning. He's making big mistakes that can almost cost lives, that could cost his own life. He's kind of getting his ass kicked here a little bit, mostly because he's trying to save the one guy.
This is one of the few times where it's like you really remember that while Batman is a superhero, he has no superpowers.
Exactly. I'm rich. As Batfleck would say. But yeah, other than being rich, he has no superpowers, and they are not helping him in the situation. But he eventually does overcome, kicks their asses, pulls the guy back over the balcony, and just collapses with these three dudes like knocked out on the balcony. I fucking love this scene so much for like seven different reasons. Do you have any specific thoughts about the specific scene? Because it's one of my favorites.
It's one of the few times where you actually see Batman struggling to win, and he's not going up against the Joker. He's not going up against, you know, some type of superpowered guy or whatever. This is like gangbangers versus Batman, and Batman is struggling to live. So while this is definitely one of those moments where it's like, man, he really fucking sucks right now, it's also one of those moments that reminds you that, you know, even though we're in the realm of fiction where we're dealing with these larger than life alpha characters sometimes, you know, while they're trying to ground it in reality, the reality is you don't just become a badass overnight because you got some training.
So moving on, we are now into the month of May, and I like that they always kind of update us with the actual dates here. So now we're May 15th. So it really gives you a sense of like how much time is moving on quite specifically here. And Gordon, he's clearly like the superstar now. So there's another scene I didn't mention. When he first comes in and is talking to Commissioner Loeb, he goes to pull out a cigarette and the commissioner's like, don't smoke that here. And so he puts it away. And now Jim Gordon is leading this meeting about Batman and he's just smoking away. Like, so you can clearly see how his status has changed. Like, he can get away with smoking now. And also this Flask guy is in there, and this is May, so this is like, I think this is 3 months later, and he's got the neck brace on, so they're still showing he is still reeling from getting the shit beat out of him by Jim Gordon here. I skipped ahead earlier. This is where Flask recounts his meeting of the Batman or what have you. So Flask knows he's real. And, this whole, basically Gordon has been put in charge of the Batman case here, because Batman has committed, I think he says like 78 acts of assault in the last like 3 months or something like that. So, while Gordon is sort of a renegade of his own, he is also the one tasked, charged with the task of tracking down this other renegade who is, you know, serving justice in his own way as well. We then get a scene here. This is when we meet, Carmine Falcone, and he is on the phone with someone who I believe is the commissioner. I think they're making it, they don't really show you, but we kind of know. And they're basically talking about this Gordon guy coming up. They talk about the Batman, but as this is going on, we see Batman, he's doing something outside here, and in the end he ends up busting up this Carmine Falcone party. He like gasses the place and comes in and basically just serves a warning to them. He comes in and says, ladies, gentlemen, you have eaten well. And I like how they show this one butler, this is the one frame of this butler, like he's holding this a lid of like this flame that is like, I don't know, and he just puts it back on while Batman says, you've eaten Gotham's wealth, its spirit, your feast is nearly over, from this moment on none of you are safe. And so Batman has laid out his warning. He is done with just the street level crime. Now he is going to the heads of the crime families and straight up telling them what's going down. So he's getting a lot ballsier here as the months go on here. And his line, he says, from this moment on none of you are safe. Batman's just working his way up the food chain. Then Commissioner Gordon is like now setting traps for Batman. Essentially, he's like, so we see this one Detective Essen, who we'll learn more about in a bit. She is basically pretending to be a damsel in distress while a cop comes and like and acts like he's going to go after her. And Batman is there watching, and he knows it's a trap. He's like, all right, another one of these traps here. So he's Bruce Wayne is too smart for these traps. He knows what's going on here. He only busts up the real crimes because he's that damn smart. We also see an interesting scene here where Jim Gordon is talking to Harvey Dent. Also along the way, like this other guy, this other mob boss, we're in June now, the Roman has been found like tied up and like his car was taken. Like Batman is just sending like little warnings. While he's busting up a lot of street crime, he's sending just more big time warnings to the bosses of these things. And Jim Gordon is talking to Harvey Dent, and he actually, we learn later when he's in the car with Essen, that he suspects Harvey Dent as someone who could be Batman because he has sort of that, you know, that same panache, that same desire for justice. But he's like, I don't know, Harvey Dent couldn't do the kind of fighting that Batman does. But we see when Commissioner Gordon is in there, after he leaves the room, Harvey Dent looks over his shoulder and says, you can come out now. And we see Batman behind Harvey Dent's desk. So we also learned that before there was a relationship there with Gordon and Batman, that Batman was actually working with Harvey Dent behind the scenes. And they never really show you how that came about in here, but because this is not from his point of view, this is from the point of view of Jim Gordon, really, mostly, even though we go back between the narratives, most of this story really is from Gordon's point of view for the most part. That part was the one thing that I did kind of think, like, I guess I could have seen more about something more, unless I just missed it, but I don't think I did. Some more detail about how Batman began working with Harvey Dent behind the scenes. Cause
you're supposed to just kind of take it on a whim. It's like one of those accept the mystery moments.
Yeah, because I mean, they're taking us through a year in four issues. So, you know, you're not going to see everything. You're just going to see sort of the progression of events. Meanwhile, Gordon is in the car with this Detective Essen. And this is the first time that she brings up Bruce Wayne. She's like, it could be Dent, but he doesn't have the money for this. Like, you need an arsenal. Like, this guy has an arsenal of weapons. And she says money. Well, Bruce Wayne is the richest man in Gotham. And being from out of town, you might not know this, but his parents were murdered by a mugger, I think. He was just a little boy at the time. And then Gordon says, somewhat foreshadowingly, I could kiss you, Essen. So now Gordon also has sort of something on his mind that, you know, it could be Bruce Wayne. Meanwhile, this is right just as this is happening. There's this truck that like just drives by and like cuts off Gordon's car. And we also see Batman at this time, who is, probably just coming out of Harvey Dent's office. This is all happening right after that meeting. And this guy is just driving this truck like crazy. Gordon's like, oh, maybe he's on pills. Maybe it's a heart attack. But either way, he's about to run over this like homeless lady in the street. And Essen's crying out like, Lieutenant, he's like, take the wheel. And their car crashes. And he gets out and tries to stop this truck from hitting this lady. But at the end, it is actually Gordon is like hanging from the truck. By the way, he jumps on the truck, and while it's still driving, he has his arm reaching in, trying to like stop the driver. It's crazy. It's like, again, with all these events, you see the parallels of like Jim Gordon is pretty much as impressive as Batman is in terms of what he's willing to do, how he's willing to risk his life just to save someone innocent. And at the same time, Batman is the one that comes out and jumps and saves this lady, which Gordon sees. And, you know, in this sort of aftermath here, like Gordon gets knocked out. And when he wakes up, he sees that Essen has a gun on Batman. But you know, Gordon knows what happened. You know, I don't think she does because she was in the middle of like driving the car. And she's saying, I called for backup. Batman goes after her just to disarm her. He says, stop or I'll. And Gordon's like pointing at him. But again, this is when the cops show up and then Bruce running away. As Bruce is running away, or Batman, I should say, whatever, he gets shot in the back of the leg. So again, this is like he is having, while he is kicking some asses, Batman, like, bad shit is happening to him along the way. Like, this is the second fucking time he has been shot in his first, you know, 3 or 4 months as Batman here. As Batman is running away, let's see. Yeah, Batman. Basically, in the end, Batman gets away. He's shot in the leg, and this Detective Brandon, who is like, he's kind of like the commissioner's go-to guy now, since Flash is basically useless now. He's like his main man on the force. He calls in a helicopter, and they blow up the freaking building that Batman ran into. So these guys are obviously, to Commissioner Gordon, not Commissioner, I keep calling him that. He's not a commissioner yet. To Jim Gordon's chagrin, he's like, "What the fuck? They just blew this building up."
That sounds like excessive force.
A little bit, yeah. And we end this issue as we just see these guys searching the rubble of this building for Batman. So what are your thoughts as we wrap up the second issue?
The stakes are definitely higher by this also being the first appearance of Batman in costume. It's just one of those things where it's like they're really trying to solidify that he had to crawl before he could run and really actually start being a hero. While we're still definitely in the beginning stages, I mean, it just kind of shows you that Bruce really did put some thought into it. While he can't anticipate getting shot and stabbed and beaten by hookers and all that stuff, like, you know, I like the fact that, unlike many other superheroes, we're getting to see that longer buildup period. I don't think Batman could have ever started like this. I'm not saying that every other hero should start like this, but when you're almost 50 years into the chronology of Batman in Detective Comics and everything, I think what was great about this and what's going to be great about The Dark Knight Returns after this is that this really kind of shows you what makes Batman such a fascinating character. It's that, you know, before there was the bat, there was the man, and his name was Bruce frickin' Wayne.
Indeed, indeed. And we continue with the story of Bruce Wayne here in Batman number 406, and Batman is in this burning building. He's like fallen down. He's avoiding little like shards of flame. Like, a part of his belt gets blown up at one point. He ends up picking a lock because he's a master locksmith apparently, and has a lockpick on him to go into this, you know, this kind of hidden room of this building. So he's basically hiding out within like a sub basement of this burning building that everyone is searching for him in. We also see, this is June 7th, by the way, moving on, and we see Selina Kyle again, who is in this room with Holly and with like a billion cats around her, because she is, of course, a freaking cat lady. She has lots of cats. And basically, Holly says, like, hey, there's these explosions outside. And Selena's like, Christ, it's not even light out. It's 5 a.m. And she's like, hey, I'm being serious. Things are blowing up over by Robinson Park. And he says, well, maybe Brandon's cornered a jaywalker. Of course, they know Brandon because all these cops use all these prostitutes. Like, this is a very, you know, corrupt
place. Wonder why rents in Gotham City is only $100 a month.
Right. Yeah. In the end, like, they figure out that there's something going on with this Batman character who they've kind of had their eyes on, and they know that he is cleaning up a lot of the street crime. So essentially, Selina decides she's going to go help out the Batman here. So, yeah, she basically starts feeding her cats and says, all right, I'll grab your coat. Let's go. They're going to go help the Batman somehow. And yeah, basically, Batman is a real tricky bastard. He's basically like hiding out in this room and also like hiding from the cops at the same time. And at one point, he is able to he throws this gas canister down at them, and basically he's really good at like sort of outsmarting these cops that are, even while he's in this confined space, without ever like killing any of them too, because that's, you know, that's his thing. He don't want to kill nobody. Oh, unless you're fucking Tom King and you want to do a Joker Riddler war and drive me crazy with that, but we're not gonna go there, Remso. He also like hits these cops with like this dart gun, and now there's this cat that's showing up. And at one point, I think it's, I don't know which cop it was. I can't tell if it's Brandon or one of the other cops, like, tries to shoot the cat. And Bruce is like, not having that shit at all.
Don't fuck with cats.
Yeah. I mean, basically most of this issue is just, it's just Batman kind of like playing cat and mouse, so to speak, I guess you could say, with these cops throughout this like building as it's burning down, as they're seeking him out, as he's doing things like hitting them with dart guns and evading them. And Batman actually like saves this cat, who is, of course, one of Selina's cats, saves this cat from being shot by these cops. And Gordon's one of Gordon's partners, who we see a lot. Merkel, I don't know if he's one of the partners, but he gets mentioned a lot. He gets shot in the whole melee. He's actually shot by the cops. They're shooting at Batman. So he's like, you freaking maniacs. Like, this is insane. Like, you're chopping buildings on the to try to kill this guy. You're shooting other cops. Like, this has gone nuts just over this one guy. Basically, in the end, these cops are coming for Batman. And this is where he kicks out this one column. And like, basically, the whole building comes down and everyone disperses. And this is like how Batman kind of gets away. He basically punts. I don't know if this is Brandon or one of the other cops, but he punches this one cop right in the gut, and he's like, oh, you're the one that tried to shoot the cat. So like, there's a little like John Wick style stuff of justice here, where like, you can tell Bruce has it in even more for this guy because he tried to shoot the fucking cat. He's like, no, I'm not just gonna run away. I'm also gonna punch you in the stomach and throw you out of the building on my way out. And then Bruce is just fighting his way. So this is the callback to that beginning scene where he kicks the tree. This is basically the same panel, essentially art wise, when he kicks out this column that helps him get away. And he's just kicking cops' ass. This is all in self-defense. Oh, and there was something that happened before this I didn't reference, but he basically has some device on him that helps him like call bats or something, like that the bats were drawn to. So as he's escaping,
it's the sonar signal.
The sonar signal, exactly. Yeah. So as he's like fighting these cops, all these bats come down, and so they're like all just like going around all these people here and all the cops, and then Bruce gets on a motorcycle, and he basically somehow he has the bats follow him. So they're following this cloud of bats, but then by the time they catch up to the cloud of bats, Bruce is gone. So he's already taken off and just sent the bats going still, and this one cop car just like flies off the dock because it was following the bats off the dock into the I don't know, is Gotham on the ocean? Maybe into, I don't think it's on the ocean. I don't know where Gotham is. I still can't figure it out. It's different in every canon and every
it felt so weird watching Superman versus Batman Dawn of Justice, knowing that like Metropolis and Gotham are only like a bridge away from each other.
Well, yeah, didn't we look it up in one episode? Yeah, I think it's like they're like Baltimore and DC basically.
Yeah,
so that kind of is, yeah, I mean, they're close, or which actually does make some sense.
Yeah, I mean, or Jersey and New York. I mean, it's,
but
just,
in
it's
the
just
Christopher
weird.
Nolan films, I think they're like clearly in New York, so it just depends.
Yeah, and Gotham is more of like an island too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you've got to cross a bridge to leave Gotham.
No, it's like Manhattan. Manhattan, basically.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's wherever you want it to be at any
Gotham
given moment.
Gotham is in your heart.
Exactly. The real Gotham are the friends we made along the way. After Bruce gets away here and Brandon ends up in the hospital, like Bruce just fucked up all these cops, but it was in self-defense. The entire time was self-defense because all he ever did in this thing was save an old lady, get shot by Essen, and then run away from cops. Or not, he didn't get shot by Essen. He got shot by these other cops and then run away. Like that's all he ever did. And then fight his way out from having a bomb dropped on him and being shot at by a bunch of cops. So he is completely justified self-defense wise in this whole thing.
Your qualified immunity ends where bat justice begins.
Yeah. There's also there's one panel here, one statement that I'm not sure. I think it might be a reference to, but they basically, it's kind of in the recap of everything that's been happening. They say, oh, there was the owner of a nearby men's store opened up his shop 4 hours later to find a 3-piece suit missing and payment for it sitting in the cash register. I'm wondering, is this supposed to be Harvey Dent buying his Two-Face suit?
No, because that won't come till that won't come till way later.
Okay, well then I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I do know who it is. I could tell you.
Tell me.
Do you want me to tell you? It's the Joker.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay,
because it will tie in at the very end of this.
Yes, yes. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, it's nice of the Joker, early Joker, to pay for the suit. At least it's good to know.
It's a weird joke. Yeah. Why would you quote steal what you're also gonna pay for?
It sounds like a riddle. Sounds like a Riddler. Ooh. Riddler riddle.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, then we move on to June 9th here, and Gordon is still strongly suspects Bruce Wayne, and he's been really investigating this with Essen. He's saying Essen informed me that Wayne's parents were murdered by a mugger and he was 6. That's enough motive, I suppose, to make a man dressed like Dracula and assault criminals and save cats. So he also saw him saving the cat. So he knows that Batman's a good guy instinctually here. He says Wayne's butler informed me that his boss has been skiing in Switzerland for 6 weeks, and also that he injured his leg when he was skiing. Of course he did, because he has to have an explanation for being shot in the leg, which of course Gordon knows that he got shot in the leg. So it's clear Gordon is very easily catching on to the fact that Bruce Wayne is Batman, but he's also not really trying to prove it either, because after what just happened with the old lady and him seeing the cops go after him, Gordon knows this is my guy, this is the guy on my side.
There's even no I'm working for the police. Bringing him in, there's exactly. Bigger things to worry about.
Exactly. So Gordon is still technically on the case of Batman, and he is trying to figure out his identity, but he's also sort of he's not really zealously going after him either. He's definitely developed that respect with him at this point. Let's see. And yeah, this is also when we learn that Gordon ends up having an affair with Essen here. And at the same time, Selina decides to, she beats the shit out of her Stan, who is their pimp basically, and takes Holly, and they're out. They're changing the line of work. She says, I've got an idea. So Selena's going to go into a different line of work. I don't know if theft is theft more honorable than prostitution, because in the end of the day, one of these is consensual still, although maybe not in their case when they're kind of being held by this this mean pimp. So it's not clear.
Well, why are the pimps always mean?
Well, this one was actually mean. I'm not trying to I am the first one who's not going to try to paint a broad brush on the pimps. You know me. I defended drug dealers in the 4th episode of this show, so you know where my stance is.
I'll defend the pimps. I don't know how a pimp is different than a boss at 9 to 5. Sometimes they can both equally yell at you, threaten you, and then tell you they're the only thing good for you.
The only difference is the product they're selling at the end of the day.
Is so weird, and I don't want to wane philosophical, but why is it when you give it away for free, it's fine. It's when you can't get taxed on it that's suddenly a crime. I think that Bruce Wayne should have gotten into politics, maybe. I don't know.
Perhaps. Someone should do a storyline where Bruce Wayne becomes the mayor of Gotham. I'm surprised. Has that been done yet? Has that not been done yet?
I mean, if you want to count Adam West.
No, I don't want to.
I don't think I want to talk about defending the legality of prostitution. We should probably move on.
Now, let's move on from that one. I agree. We also see
we're now in August. Stan is a bad dude.
We're now in August. Yeah, Stan is a bad guy. We'd like to be clear. So we actually see Selina now suiting up in the cat suit for the first time as well. So we also see the parallels to, we see really through this story how Jim Gordon primarily is so essential to Batman as a character, but they're almost symbiotic in their relationship. But then also we see Catwoman sort of emerging at the same time, and her story, they all ride along the same storyline that's going on here essentially. Selina is riding out as Catwoman, and we end this issue as Jim Gordon is sitting in his bed holding a gun. I don't think he's contemplating suicide, but you know, you could take that here because he is holding a gun in his hand while his wife, his pregnant wife, sleeps, who is not pregnant with Barbara, as I originally thought. Thank you, Mr. Actually. And he's just pondering Batman and pondering the fact that he's having an affair while his pregnant wife sleeps as we end up issue 3 of Batman Year One. What do you think, Remzo, as we head into the finale here?
Shit's gone wild. What I like it's about this is each oh my God, I almost did
it.
Oh, you got the disease.
Oh
my gosh, no. No. Anyway,
happens to the best of us.
Every issue has escalating anticipation and it's building that suspense, and I absolutely love it.
All right. So we dive into Batman number 407. We are now in the month of September. Commissioner Gordon is still having an affair, but you can see he's like he's having the affair, but he's also kind of calling it off with Essen. They're like at this diner.
He's got to hit it one more time.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, you should take this bracelet. I'm sure your wife would like it. And she's like, he's like, no, keep it. He's like, well, he's like, yeah, I know you're right. Like, I just want to know if your wife wasn't pregnant, would you? And she's like, I'm sorry, that's not fair. So yeah, he's breaking it off. So he had his moment when he was just in the heat of the Batman stuff and ended up having this affair, but he's doing the right thing, I guess you could say, as right as you can do when you've done such a wrong, and just sort of trying to own up to the whole thing.
Be gone, thought.
But as you mentioned, not before he gets one more night, because then because then on September 7th we see him making out with Essen again. So yeah, he hasn't quite totally called it off just yet.
I just don't know how to quit you.
There is this guy who's like this undercover. Oh no, he's this criminal named Jefferson Skeevers. Basically, they set bail for this guy, and Dent did not argue the bail. And we learned from a conversation with Gordon and the commissioner. I think that's the commissioner. Maybe that's not the commissioner. I can't tell. So Gordon is just pissed off. He's like, I know you're not on the take, and I don't think you're crazy. Tell me why you let this Skeevers guy on the street, Dent. Oh yeah, it's Dent he's talking to. And he's like, I know how you feel, Lieutenant. Would you like to borrow my umbrella? And basically they're having this conversation while Batman is hanging on the wall outside listening, because as we know, he's Harvey Dent's buddy. Has there ever been anyone that kind of went more into detail of that part of the backstory? I'm sure someone has along the way, but I've never seen it.
So here I'm going to tell you like the order of which these stories will happen. And so far, this has not been something that DC has tried to refute. You've got Batman Year One, you've got Batman Year Two, and then you've got Batman The Long Halloween. Now,
I've read The Long Halloween. I've not read Year Two.
So Year Two is worthless. Year Two is basically one of those things where it's like, you don't have to read it. You could just skip to The Long Halloween, okay. But The Long Halloween goes straight into it. The Batman Year Two was actually, Todd McFarlane's first crack at Batman, and no one liked it. So they were just like, we're going to basically just put this away and not talk about it.
At the end of the day. Oh no, I'm sorry. I went another day. This is one day. Jim is arguing with Dent about the Skeevers guy letting him go, but it's because Skeevers is going to testify, I think against Flass, against the commissioner, maybe against Carmine Falcone. So that's why this Skeevers character, or they want him to, I guess they're trying to convince
him. He's Takeshi 6'9". He's about to squeal on everybody.
So, Batman. So basically the Skeevers guy is in this hotel room, talking to, I think it's his lawyer, and the lawyer's like, look, you say one word about Flash and they'll kill both of us, Skeevers. Now take that thing out of your nose and listen to me. Cause he's just blowing lines of cocaine here. He's like, this line, you could never have this line. Even if it's just supposed to show a sign of the times, you could never have this line in a modern book. But she says, where do I start? Well, it's bad enough that you're black. then she says, I want you in a blue suit at the inquiry. Like, that just could not be in a book in 2021 from DC Comics. I want you in a blue suit at the inquest with a tie. Make it black. Same for the shoes. None of that pimp stuff. She's like, don't wear your pimp gear.
I can't get too into it, but I was filing a suit against a former employer a while back, and I thought about throwing it on discrimination grounds. And my lawyer,
also, I'm Puerto Rican, and that
my lawyer was like, I don't think you're gonna get through court very well. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, because you sound too white. And I'm like, how dare you?
So this is basically the inverse of that. Lawyers gotta tell you what's up.
It's very realistic. I'll give it that. It's lawyers funny, cut past the bullshit.
It's funny the timing of this. This actually reminds me, the same yesterday when I was prepping for this episode, on that same day, my wife had never seen it before. We watched the last episode of Seinfeld. I don't know if you've ever seen the last episode of Seinfeld, but this is this really reminded me of a scene where Jackie Childs is in there telling like Jerry he should wear this different tie and telling them how they all need to dress different. And then Kramer's like, how do I look? He's like, you always look fantastic, Mr. Kramer. Oh, it's so fucking funny. So anyway, Batman, after Skeevers is done talking to his lawyer leaves, and Batman breaks in and beats the shit out of Skeever's eyes are red and popping out of his freaking eyeballs, and the lawyer's like, are you all right? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, all right, better lay off that coke. And he just leaves. Meanwhile, and Batman says, like, you can never escape me. Bullets don't harm me, nothing harms me, but I know pain. Sometimes I share it with someone like you. So while Batman does not kill, he's willing to kick some ass, and he's willing to make, you know, put people in pain, just like Commissioner Gordon. They're very, very similar in their approach to everything. Next, on September 12th, the very next day, magically, Skeevers is there, and he wants to talk to Harvey Dent. He wants to cop a plea. So now we can see the big picture that Harvey Dent let Skeevers out of jail because he's working with Batman, and he knew he was working with Batman, coordinating with him to go and basically rough up Skeevers. So Dent is like, I guess technically corrupt, he's going outside the law, but he's on the similar path as like Gordon and Batman. They're basically three rebels of the system that they work within the system. Well, Batman doesn't work within the system, but Gordon and Dent both work within the system, but they very much break the rules, and they very much both end up in one way or another working with Batman to bring down the crime. So I just love how this lays the groundwork for so many characters here too. And especially, knowing what becomes of Harvey Dent, it really does a lot to show you that he was a good guy before things went awry, so to speak. He was really much a good guy, very much in the same vein as Batman and as Jim Gordon.
Yeah, it makes it more tragic.
Yes. Moving on here. So the commissioner is now, he calls Gordon into his office, and he ends up basically threatening him about his affair with Essen, which he sort of called off, but then he made out with her like a couple days later. So, and Gordon just like freaks out because they've got pictures of it. And this is when Gordon realized like, oh, I'm in a fucking trap here. Like I'm about to take these fuckers down, and they got me in a bind here. So Gordon, being the freaking swell guy he is, first he goes to, now we're in September 25th, and Gordon goes to meet with Bruce Wayne, who is like hanging out with this like foreign lady, and just, he's kind of like acting like an arrogant prick, and just, he's like, oh no, I've heard you want to think I'm Batman. That's like hilarious. No, I've been skiing in the Alps and all this stuff, and Gordon leaves here, and he's like, yeah, that's fuck. He's talking to his wife now, who, it's kind of weird he brought his wife on this like thing to go meet with Bruce Wayne to see if he's Batman, but
this is
whatever.
Why cops don't have long marriages, it seems.
But as they're leaving, and Gordon's kind of onto it, and she's like, I don't know, he doesn't really seem like the kind of guy that would be Batman. He's a pig. And he's like, well, he's acting like a pig, that's for sure. But any man who'd wear a cape, and it's a cape, not wings, I've seen it. Anybody who'd wear a cape and hunt criminals might go pretty far to keep his secrets. Secrets, damn it all. And then he pulls over, and she's like, Jim, why are you stopping? And he says, honey, there's something we have to talk about. And then again, you don't need to see what happens next because you know what happens next. So I loved it. I just love how Frank Miller is always able to tell us what happened. He's been able to paint a scene in our minds of something without actually having to show us. He just has to show us this one panel of Gordon saying, honey, there's something we have to talk about. And he then had to tell her what was going on, which we had to do, well, A, for moral reasons anyway, but also because this disarmed the one piece of ammunition that they had against him, threatening him with this affair. So he just took that out of their Rolodex at the same time. So served a couple purposes there. Let's see. Then we also, as we go through, we're in like October now, and Jim's wife is getting calls, and then like they show her just saying, yes sir, yes, I know about Sergeant Essen, please don't bother me again. Like, so she just knows it and kind of going along with it now that he's confessed and everything, and she understands why he confessed. What a freaking great wife, by the way, sticking by his side through.
She wants that pension
shit. She wants that police pension for sure. We also see that like there's some news reports of like a new thief who's on the prowl, so to speak. And they actually blame Batman for this robbery. So like Selina's all pissed off. She's like, what? They just think I'm Batman now? Like I need something else for people to know that I'm not Batman, basically. So she's kind of miffed at the fact that he's getting credit for some of her actual like petty crimes. Let's see. And then we get a scene where Selina comes in and she and Batman sees this scene. We've kind of seen the scene in a couple different, probably in the movie as well. And I think we saw this maybe in the Christopher Nolan movie, something similar to this, where Batman kind of sees Selina breaking in, and she basically ends up she's robbing this guy, the Roman, and she's going after her guys are coming after him. And as she's like finishing up fighting these guys, who she kicks all their asses, she just goes and scratches this one guy's face. I think that's the Roman. Yeah, she scratches the Roman's face. So that's her calling card. That's how you know that that Catwoman's been on the prowl and not the Batman. Meanwhile, the commissioner is setting up Jim Gordon. We're now in November here, and Jim Gordon is being set up to essentially be killed by the commissioner. He gets a call, and while he's feeding the baby, and they say he has to come out. And I'm not sure how. I think he might have had his phone tapped or something. I don't know. But this guy, as Gordon is leaving, this guy in a motorcycle we see is following him. And then his baby gets kidnapped actually by someone. So he realizes his baby, he was just called away from that apartment so that these guys could kidnap their baby. And this mysterious like dude in the motorcycle is following him. And this guy basically helps tries to help Gordon. He does help her get Barbara away from this guy, but the kidnapper ends up fleeing with Gordon's baby. And she's Barbara Gordon. She doesn't know really exactly how this, it's a lot of chaos here. So she's grabs a gun, Gordon's gun, and she points it at this mysterious figure who we never really see his face, but we know who this is now. And she says, Mrs. Gordon, you have to trust me. I won't let your boy die. And he just runs off and she does not shoot him. And then this guy, who is obviously Bruce Wayne at this point, in like shitty makeup or something, he just jumps on a regular bike and starts biking after Gordon, who's on his motorcycle chasing the guy in the car who has his baby. And Gordon ends up like shooting the car. Seems like a risky move when the guy's got your baby, but it's a tense moments here. The guy crashes the car. Gordon gets out, is like grappling with this guy who's coming at him with a knife while holding his freaking baby here. And then they all like tumble over this bridge, the guy and the baby. And as Gordon is like fighting this guy, the baby falls over, and we see the baby flying as Barbara goes, and Gordon is like trying to catch the baby as well, and the baby falls into this guy's hands, who is of course Bruce Wayne. And we just see the scene where the guy is dead, the guy that was trying to kidnap the baby, and Commissioner Gordon has got, I keep calling him Commissioner, Jim Gordon has gotten his baby back. And this is where he says, "That's right, good boy, settle down, you're safe." And now he's talking to who's obviously Bruce Wayne. He says, "You must be wearing some armor under that jacket." And he says, "Yes." And he says, "I'm practically blind without my glasses. Siren's coming, you better go." So this is like the moment where, and it becomes so clear why they don't, like, Batman and Gordon don't just work together because it's convenient. Like, Batman saved Jim Gordon's freaking baby and wife, and literally caught his baby who was falling off a bridge. So like he doesn't just respect him because of what he's done in fighting crime, just because of what happened with him now saving that old lady. Yeah, now it's absolutely personal. And I love this so much because it really makes their relationship in later comics and later canon make even more sense. How the level of trust they have for each other, it's more than just strategic. It's more than just because they have the same objectives and the same goals in fighting crime. It's because he literally saved his baby. And so I think it brings so many future stories together so well. We then see that Flass ends up testifying against the commissioner, who I think he doesn't end up going to jail. Like, I think this says, they're saying, "I don't think Dent has a chance of putting him behind bars, but word is Loeb's conferring with the mayor on the terms of his resignation." So, they're forcing this commissioner to resign. I don't think they say it here, but this obviously implies, this is what lays the path. Like, because they already say some other commissioner is going to replace this guy. So Commissioner Gordon doesn't become commissioner right here, but obviously the path has been laid open for him. And as we wind up here, we just see Commissioner Gordon. Again, this is really like a Commissioner Gordon story in many ways, more so than a Bruce Wayne story. We see Commissioner Gordon is just like on the roof smoking his pipe, and he's thinking to himself, As for me, well, there is a real, first thing, Barbara's not crazy about the marriage counselor, but we're making progress. So, you know, they're working things out. And he says, as for me, well, there's a real panic on. Somebody's threatened to poison the Gotham Reservoir. Calls himself the Joker. I've got a friend coming who might be able to help. Should be here any minute. So now we have solidified this relationship between Batman and Jim Gordon. And that does it for Batman Year One. And I will just say, like, that scene, this particular scene has been played out in like various different ways in many different formats, many different films. And at the end of Christopher Nolan's, at the end of Batman Begins, Commissioner Gordon meets with Batman, and actually, like, it's kind of similar, but they're meeting together and he's like, oh, there's this guy, the Joker, and he hands him like the Joker card. And of course, that's what leads us to Heath Ledger's Joker and all that great stuff. But that wraps it for Batman Year One. Remzo, let's have it. Let's hear it.
Man, you do not have Batman without Batman Year One. I mean, this is not only, some great Frank Miller work, but it's just quintessential to the Batman canon. I'm giving the story a 5 out of 5, and I'm giving the artwork a 5 out of 5. I really can't think of anybody who could have done it like this. And I mean, we have Todd McFarlane, who will come in for Year Two, which is almost immediately after this. And then we've got Jeff Loeb, and I think it was Tim Sales, who come in for Batman The Long Halloween. And that was a limited series that came out.
We should
out
do that one
time.
Next Halloween. I'm just going to call it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be cool. Those three things kind of play around with each other, but like that way you really get to see what I consider like the Year One saga, which is Year One, Year Two, and Long Halloween. It's, you know, the others are good. I like Long Halloween. I did not like Year Two, but Year One is, you can't, I mean, so many Batman stories are based off of this as the grounding. I mean, you can't have it otherwise. The artwork is fantastic. The story is fantastic. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, so this one, I'm gonna agree with you on the writing. I can't find a flaw in Frank Miller's writing here. I just think it's just so effective. He's such a great writer. He's a great writer when he's writing long narratives, and he's a great writer when he's giving you one line or one panel that tells you a whole story that you didn't need to actually see play out to understand what happened and to get a feel for how it happened. So, I mean, this is Frank Miller. This is, maybe it's not like considered some of his greatest work. I mean, it is, but you know, it's not necessarily one of the first ones that comes up. But
it's great,
to
Batman.
Me,
it's not the best Frank Miller.
Yeah, that's fair. But it is some of the best Batman, and it is a fantastic story. So I also am going to give the writing a 5 on this. I'm not going to go quite as high on the art, but it is excellent. It does fit the story so well. But I'm actually applying something that you've talked about before. And I thought about this a little bit before the show. You know, you'll often say, like, can I picture another artist doing this? And this is actually one instance where, honestly, if I could, I think I would put in Frank Miller on this art. Like, I actually, and not because this is bad, this is great. But when I picture Frank Miller's art, like his art from Dark Knight Returns, like in this, I actually feel like I kind of like crave Frank Miller's rendition of this. So that's the only reason I'm giving it a 4.5. It is a little bit of a quibble. The art is excellent throughout. There's just like, you know, a couple panels here and there where I'm like, oh, was that cop? The same cop that, you know, I'm not exactly sure. They kind of look generic, but this is a very minor quibble because the art truly is excellent. But I got to say, there's a part of me that would really have liked to see Frank Miller's artistic rendition of the story.
And you see, this is why I gave this a higher rating than some of the other Frank Miller books that we've done in the past, because my criticism, to kind of, you know, target your comment there, which I agree, I understand where you're coming from. I've never been happy when Miller has been in charge of both the writing and the art for his books. I always feel like one thing takes away.
I think you rated Ronin pretty highly.
I rated Ronin pretty highly, but I didn't give Ronin a 10.
Yeah, well, no, that's true.
I think because Miller didn't have to worry about the art for this one, he let the dialogue and everything else really stand out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to be said for that, too. I'm sure he does approach a book he's just writing much differently than when he's writing and drawing, especially because when he's doing both.
I apply that to everyone, though. I'm not a fan of the writer artist mindset that some people think they can get away with. I think there's something important about having a separate writer and a separate artist.
I will say I couldn't envision Savage Dragon any other way in that case.
That's such a weird exception, though.
It is for sure. Yeah. Typically, I think you're right about that.
Yeah. Like, he's the one off.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it. So that gives us a total of a 19.5 total SBC score. This is a very obvious must read. If you're a fan of comics, if you're a fan of good stories, if you're a fan of street level crime stories, if you're a fan of anything awesome, you've got to read this. Like this is a quintessential comic book story. It's a quintessential pop culture story. Even if you just like Batman from movies or TV shows, like this helps you understand Batman so much more, no matter where you're coming from, because it really is a lot of the foundation, you know, especially for the modern renditions of Batman. So really cannot recommend this highly enough. I will say, it's on Hoopla, folks. Hoopla is freaking amazing. We do not get any revenue from mentioning them. I just bring it up because it's really helped me find and read so many comics that I might not have otherwise physically found, or would have had to maybe buy on Comixology if I couldn't find physical copies. It's just a really easy way. Almost any quintessential story is on Hoopla. All you need is a library card. I did mine online, so I didn't even have to go to a library. It's freaking worth it. And I wish I did make money pimping it, but I don't. But, you know, if you're looking to read some of these books that we talk about, almost everything that we mention is on Hoopla. So I recommend it highly.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Hoopla for no money.
Well, Mark, I'm happy we finally did this. I think this is one of the first stories that you wanted to do when we started Way Yonder back. I think we got to wrap up the show because I'm going to go ahead and catch the first screening of Eternals tonight. So this leads into something else. If you love the show, if you love everything we're doing, if you want to go ahead and hear my spoiler-free review that will be coming up this Sunday, well, past last Sunday because of time and stuff like that. So right now, by the time you're listening to this, I've got a spoiler-free review of Eternals on Patreon. You can catch that and all the bonus shows for as little as $5 a month.
Indeed.
That's all I got.
That's all I got, too. So with that being said, I just want to implore you to continue along this journey with Remzo and I, and to take some time out of your days, out of your weeks, to continue to read comics and change the world.
And change the world. Good night, America.
Adios.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.